The games of Lorain County. I heard this guy was quite a scholar back in his day. He's our Hollywood guru, Michael Warschauer. Michael, can you confirm or deny that claim?
I can confirm it. I'm pretty confident in that. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, fair enough. We'll put you to the test one of these days, but we'll save that. We'll save that for a little bit later on. Now, so many questions for you today, but I want to begin with Judge Judy. She's going to end her run, at least on the Judge Judy show anyways, after a quarter of a century. So I saw a figure earlier today, and I had to do a double take. I saw somewhere that she had made hundreds of millions of dollars. Can you confirm that? She's actually made that much money in over the last 25 years?
Yes. I don't know how long she's had this contract, but her current contract is the highest paid in all of television. She makes $47 million a year off of her show on her contract. That probably means she doesn't own very much of the syndication rights, which is the biggest reason why Judge Judy is actually ending. CBS bought her the whole 25 years worth of episodes just a couple of years ago, and I think now they think that they really have a pretty decent-sized library to sell out to syndication. So now they don't want to have to pay her that incredibly large $47 million a year deal. So they've cut her loose. She says she's going to be back. She has a show that she's going to call Judy Justice, but has not revealed where that show will premiere or when it will come out. So a lot of questions, but yeah, she has made a truly incredible amount of money off of her show, much more than you would expect.
That blew me away. I mean, the number that I saw earlier, I want to say, was somewhere near $500 million over the last quarter of a century. I mean, that's insane. You talk about a show that I know a lot of people have latched onto, and I know it's a very heavily watched daytime show for whatever that's worth, but, I mean, that number was shocking to me to see that she's made that much over the last 25 years.
Yeah, I think that it really shows, you know, the power of her personality on daytime television, that it would be worth that much. Again, I think a large portion of that number comes from the fact that she probably isn't going to make a lot of money off of the syndication of the show. So once you start seeing these old episodes of Judge Judy rerunning, now that she's going to go off and be Judy Justice, she probably won't be making very much, if anything, off of those because she got so much upfront. It's kind of an old-fashioned TV deal. Nowadays, a lot of actors and personalities are really looking for that back end, are looking for as much as they can get off of the resale value, so to speak, of their program. So she's certainly a shrewd businesswoman and got her money up front. And whatever she does next, she can do it in style. That's for sure.
Yeah, she could go out her way, and she could be judge, jury, executioner, whatever she wants to be, that's for sure, when you've pulled down as much as she has over the last 25 years. All right, transitioning onto the big screen. I'm not quite sure how, but The Invisible Man kind of became this year's first horror hit. Now, we're only a couple of months into 2020, but I saw the previews of that movie, and I thought, boy, that seems awfully similar to what we saw in Hollow Man, starring Kevin Bacon and Elizabeth Shue about 20 years ago. And it's the kind of story that just makes you go, I don't know, I guess I've seen that before. Doesn't seem like there's a whole lot new here. But how is it that Invisible Man became this year's first big horror hit?
Well, I think there's a couple things. First of all, it kind of comes out of Universal's kind of their properties, The Invisible Man, of course, like the infamous, famous old horror film, The Invisible Man. They've retained those rights. And a couple of years ago, they infamously announced something that would be called the Marvel Dark Universe. And it was a expanded universe, sort of like Marvel, but it would be made up of all of the monster characters from their back catalog. So The Mummy reboot a few years ago with Tom Cruise was a part of that. I believe there was The Wolfman as well with Benicio del Toro. And this famously just bombed because those two movies completely tanked. I mean, they had Johnny Depp was lined up, Russell Crowe was lined up, amongst others. and they ended up canning the whole series, but they still have the rights to these titles. They've been working with Blumhouse, who is really been on the front of a lot of the horror genre of the last few years. They've been one of the big producing houses for horror movies. And so they ended up producing this for Universal. So it is kind of a retread, certainly of an idea we've seen before. Everything I've heard, though, says that this movie is really carried by Elizabeth Moss, who is just on an absolute tear right now, especially if you saw Us last year. She has a small but really just fantastic role in that. And I think that part of the reason why it did so well is that, like a lot of recent horror successes, it taps into a kind of horror that is very real and has a sort of social base to it. In this case, The Invisible Man is Elizabeth Moss's abusive husband who is continuing to terrorize her. So I think that there has become a wave of horror films that really does tap into a social or very personal thing that is becoming very popular and working very well. And I think that worked in Invisible Man's favor. And obviously, yeah, had a really big opening. We'll see how well it can sustain it. Definitely kind of a surprise that it's the big horror movie of the year.
Again, we're being joined on the hotline by our Hollywood guru, Michael Warschauer. He's our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. All right, we're going to stick with the box office, and then we're going to go back about 20 or so years to a movie that a certain actress is apparently regretting. But we'll come back to that in just a second. So we're 2 months in, and the box office numbers are actually up 3.5%. And I know in a lot of our previous conversations, I think we had talked about how, well, things are kind of down this weekend. Things aren't looking too great this weekend. Then a blockbuster comes out. It seems to save the day, or at least it seems to save the month. But 3.5%, I mean, 2 months into the year, those are pretty promising numbers. Any particular reason, do you think, for that?
Well, I think that there have been a couple of big tent poles this year that have really helped. Right now, there are 5 movies that have surpassed the $100 million mark at the box office in 2020 alone, and they've done really, really well. Jumanji, the newest Star Wars, Sonic the Hedgehog, 1917, and leading the pack at almost $200 million is Bad Boys for Life. So you've had a couple of really big movies come out. I think 1917 gave a big boost because of its Oscar potential, getting in $150 million. On a Best Picture nominee from January and February. That's pretty huge. So I think it helps that there's just been a lot of those big releases. I think even the smaller ones that are on this list are pretty significant. There's the Harley Quinn Birds of Prey movie has brought in about $80 million. Even a big flop like Doolittle, $75 million. So there's been, I think, a lot just of noteworthy things, first of all, at the box office. But I also think that this kind of winter in particular, studios were really going to try and put some more of these major tent poles that maybe you're more likely to see in the summer. They're kind of putting them out early so that earlier in the year so that there's a chance to kind of build some box office buzz throughout the year, as opposed to just putting it into short sections of like the summer or that kind of thing. So I think studios are just getting a little bit wiser, spreading out their tent poles, and that's helped the box office in the long run.
And there seemed to be a decent collection of titles out right now, not really like one superior blockbuster and the rest just kind of come in second place or third place. It seems like there's a nice variety of movies out there right now. You mentioned the newest installment of Bad Boys. My wife and I saw that this weekend. I thought it was hilarious. I know it got some mixed reviews, but I thought Martin Lawrence stole the show. I thought he was terrific. And that's still doing fairly well at the box office, even though I believe this past weekend was its 7th. So I think that says a lot about the staying power, not only for the most recent installment, but of course for that entire series as well. Now, there are some newer titles on the way, and we'll talk about a couple of these. I want to start with the new Ben Affleck movie, The Way Back. That debuts this weekend. What kinds of things are you hearing about this movie?
I think this is one that I'm certainly interested in. I mean, if you've been watching any NBA basketball over the last 3 weeks, you've probably seen 1,000 commercials for it. Ben Affleck is a like former high school basketball star who has fallen on tough times and is returning to coach his alma mater. It just seems like kind of a classic basketball inspirational movie. But the director, Gavin O'Connor, I mean, he's done movies like Warrior a few years ago. He did The Accountant with Ben Affleck. He made Miracle, the movie about the Miracle on Ice team. So he has kind of a pretty strong pedigree. He's done some sports movies before. I think this is one I'm kind of looking forward to seeing. It hasn't gotten any early reviews yet. Rotten Tomatoes still has none up listed for it. So that doesn't always bode well if a movie has an embargo on reviews until it comes out. But it could also just be that they're finishing it up late and it's behind schedule and maybe they just haven't screened it yet. So it's hard to not read too much into that, but it's certainly one that looks like it has a lot of promise, and certainly given the cast and crew behind it, could be something pretty special.
Okay, one other new movie I have to ask you about before we go back to one that was made 20 years ago that's making headways. So, you know, I'm a huge fan of the movie The Big Lebowski. And there's a spinoff called Jesus Rolls. Now, some of the early critic reviews haven't been all that great, but those who have seen it, the fan score, I guess, for lack of a better term, has been pretty solid so far. Thoughts on what you've heard about this movie to this point?
It has been mixed reviews. I think there are some people who have seen it and just sort of shrugged it off as being kind of an unnecessary Coen Brothers spinoff. There have been some people who have found it just kind of delightful and fun. That is sort of the direction that I anticipate receiving this film. I think if you go in and you're expecting The Big Lebowski 2, you're going to be disappointed. But if you're interested in kind of a crazy story about a character that you know with a really fantastic cast, then I think you're going to have a lot of fun. The movie is about Jesus gets out of jail, his Big Lebowski character, and he and his friend, played by Bobby Cannavale, start to go on a kind of bad decision spree. They steal a car that's owned by John Hamm. They end up kind of kidnapping someone, and it just sort of turns into a wild chain of events in a very Coen Brothers fashion. But it's a great cast. John Turturro, Bobby Cannavale, Christopher Walken, John Hamm, Pete Davidson, Audrey Tautou. So there's a lot of really great people in it. It's one that I'm excited to see. Again, I think if you're expecting Big Lebowski 2, you might be disappointed, but if you're going to have a good time, anyways, you'll probably enjoy it.
See, that's an interesting way of looking at it, because I think inherently people are going to think Big Lebowski 2, but look, let's be honest here. Mm-hmm. You're not making a Big Lebowski sequel unless the dude and Walter are involved. So we should remove those expectations when we go into something like this. But you're right. I think that moniker will always stick if you're talking about a spinoff. But regardless, I'm excited to see that because the story and the cast, as you mentioned, they both seem pretty darn interesting and very, very intriguing. All right. Got to ask you about Gwyneth Paltrow. She mentioned recently that she regrets her role in Shallow Hal. Found that fascinating. I mean, look, I thought Shallow Hal was hilarious. I thought it was very well done. But, you know, this has been, that came out about 20 years ago, maybe not quite, maybe a little bit less than that. Why is it that Gwyneth Paltrow now is coming out and stating that she regrets her role in Shallow Hal?
It seems very odd that it's coming back to the forefront now, like you said, especially for a movie that, was fairly funny, has had no place in the pop culture conscience for 20 years. It all came about, she was doing a kind of Q&A at an event with one of her closest friends and working collaborators, a guy named Kevin Keating. And the question was, they were asking questions about her to him. And he was asked what her least favorite film was, her least favorite performance. And he said that he guessed Shallow Hal. And she said, yes. She said it was before he worked for her, so he couldn't stop her from doing it, and it was a disaster. And that's kind of all she said. I think a lot of it has to do with sort of the body image, politics and everything surrounding that that's related to the movie. She wore a fat suit famously for it, where she played a very, very obese woman who Jack Black, his character, is hypnotized into seeing as a thin, beautiful supermodel like Gwyneth Paltrow. And so I think that it just is sort of kind of a dated concept, a dated premise for sure. And I think that that has a big part to do with it. But other than that, she really didn't offer a lot of clues as to why. And it's just kind of strange. Like I said, it's just one of those movies that I don't think anybody will rush to talk about if you bring up even Farrelly Brothers movies. So a little peculiar that it's entered the conversation again.
Yes, that was my thought too. Odd that it would come back up in a conversation, you know, two decades later. But I digress. I thought the movie was very well done. I thought it was hilarious. I thought the story was good too. And, you know, Jason Alexander. I said George because every time I think of Jason Alexander, I think of George from Seinfeld. I thought his character was outstanding in Shallow Hal. Thought he was hysterical. All right, Michael, let's get into this week's Picks to Click. What should we be watching this week?
Well, a couple of FX shows having their premieres. First of all, Better Things, season 4, Pamela Adlon's fantastic show about motherhood and life in middle age that is just so wonderful. I highly recommend it. It premieres its fourth season on Thursday, as well as a new limited series called Devs. It is from Alex Garland, who made Ex Machina and Annihilation, amongst other things. It's a very weird sci-fi show set in the software industry. It's one of the more intriguing TV shows of the year, so that will certainly be worth checking out on Thursday. And you can find that, I believe, on Hulu, where FX now has all of their content for you to watch the day after. So a good chance, if you have Hulu, but have not watched some of these shows on FX to get caught up and see what they're all about.
Great, great stuff. Michael, as always, we appreciate you joining us. Thank you so much for the time. We would look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.